Hey there, welcome to the Rheology Podcast. I'm Brandon. Today's episode of So They Say will focus on the Bible, and more specifically, what people are saying about it. If you haven't noticed, people tend to have quite a few thoughts on the Bible. Some don't know what it's about, others think it's a basic instruction manual for life, and some think it's completely out of touch. This is episode 13.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
How's everybody doing today? It's a brand new day.
It is a brand new day. And my walk into the office here today.
How was the train? Did you take the train this morning?
Oh, yeah. I took the train last time and I had some of those weirdos on that train. I was like, I can't do this.
You judging Christians.
Yeah. And they were all wearing crosses and had Bibles and stuff.
What about the bus? Have you considered the bus yet?
I'm not going to do that. It's going to be a four-tier process, I think, at this point. Okay. To find transportation into the office. I walked today, but the cicadas were like numbing.
Oh, okay.
Numbing. White noise out there.
I wonder if
fall asleep out there.
You'd think it would put you to sleep, but I just kept, as we said before, I felt like aliens were over the horizon about to come and suck me up into a cage.
Where are we at on aliens? Should we get into aliens?
Where are we at on aliens? I don't believe there are any.
Really?
No.
That's kind of surprising.
Do you believe they're like tiny creatures, like bacteria,
like cicadas?
Yeah, not intelligent aliens, but like
bacteria,
microscopic organisms.
Yeah.
I would say that there are residual elements from like certain gases or certain other elements that cause the presence of things, right? I don't think God said, hey, out here on star 58 44, right, which is 20 million light years away, I'm gonna create some bacteria out there. I love that.
But
bacteria,
what you're saying is that there's a chance.
There is.
I feel like that if you do the math, and of all the chances of life existing, there's a great, great chance that life does exist somewhere in this vast, vast, vast universe.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like, that doesn't smell like God to me. What smells like God to me is that he creates this unbelievable vastness, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, puts this pale blue mm-hmm dot out in the middle of it, and mm-hmm creates his creation out there in the center of it, or not center, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. But just on purpose to go, I am huge, you are small. To me, that smells more like God instead of like, you guys are very, very special. And so is the creation over here,
right,
in Ursa Major, I don't know. There was a video like captured just a couple of weeks ago of a quote unquote UFO that streamed past someone in a plane. It looked kind of convincing.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
I don't know what that was. It could have been a drone, and they've had all kinds of horrible problems with people with drones.
Oh, what'd you say?
A graduation balloon.
It's a graduation weather balloon.
One time I saw a TikTok.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Did you see this? No. There was like a UFO, mm-hmm, and then the internet was like, let's figure out where this is. So they figured out the location, and then they looked at all these like balloons, and they found the exact balloon from a store that sells that balloon, and they matched it to the thing they saw in the sky.
No way. The internet is undefeated.
Yeah, undefeated.
It strikes again.
Yeah.
When in doubt, gang, look it up.
Yeah.
It's
Turn to TikTok, honestly.
Turn to TikTok first. And then that will lead you right deeper into the internet. And then pray for God.
And then read your Bible.
Get you to click the right link.
Segway.
Yeah.
Read your Bible. This is a question. I just wrote this morning. I've been thinking about it a lot, though. It's like, I wonder what your guys' students, the students you talk to on a daily basis, what's their general idea of the Bible?
They have no idea what it is.
I know. I also wanted to know what the actual thoughts of the Bible is.
I don't know. You tell me.
I think they have this weird relationship with it where most students who say that they're Christian and they come into college, they know it's important, mm-hmm, for sure. They mm-hmm know they're supposed to read it for sure, but there's so many things in it that are confusing. And so they come into college not really knowing the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Of just God's story, but especially the purpose of Scripture.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Concur.
They don't know what to do with it. It is like giving my kid a miter saw, right? It's like they have like, oh yeah, this I've seen my dad use it, but they don't know what it's actually for. And
a miter
like,
saw?
Well, it is sharper than a two-edged sword, so we could just say miter saw.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just like it's this tool that's so overwhelming. It looks cool. Okay. They don't know the actual function. I'm trying to like build a
like an old IBM computer that like filled a whole room or something, and you're like you don't even know where to begin.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Right, and so but they have
and
their
they do
own
begin in Genesis,
yes.
and they go,
what's happening? Yeah, then they realize they can't read the Bible on their own, so then they just take their word or other people's like interpretation as. Like, oh, this is what the Bible is for.
Sure.
Because it's so unapproachable.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But they also...
It's almost like a Tyndale biography.
For some.
Yeah, okay. For some.
Okay. Very few.
Whatever. They I think they tend to see the world through the Bible because they've... Sunday school, it's always about the Bible. Their sermon, typically about the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But then Bible study is such a big thing for most Christians and...
Woof.
And that's a completely different conversation, but it's always seen as like this thing that I'm supposed to understand and know and share with people. But when you just ask people, what is the Bible for? They just stumble over the words.
Yeah.
Right. It's so that I can have a relationship with God. Or it's so that I can know what to do or what not to do, or it's so many things. And I think for us on campus, our goal is not for people to read the Bible.
Okay.
And we tell students to stop reading the Bible. Once they start saying things like really legalistic things, like I have to read the Bible or I wouldn't know what it would be like to have a relationship with God without the Bible. Then that for us is like, oh, maybe you should take a break from reading the Bible. Because your relationship with God is seen through this tool that you don't even know how to process.
Yeah.
So take a step back and see what your relationship with God looks like without the Bible. And in every single case, there's been this like aha moment for students to be like, oh, maybe the Bible is not like the fourth arm of the Trinity, like Chris says all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We throw it up there with it's so important. And it is important, but it's not your relationship with God.
I'm starting to flinch a little bit here. I'm expecting lightning bolt to come through the studio and incinerate you instantly.
I know.
Well, it's funny too because we're probably the only people of like authority in these students' lives to tell them not to read the Bible.
Yeah.
And so they are like, no, but I have to tell you that I have to tell.
They almost have withdrawals.
Yeah.
It's strange. Yeah.
But then there's other people who never read the Bible. There's some students who
sure, just like, I was going
to
say.
Those people we're not telling to not read the Bible.
Yeah, that is very true.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
So it's all over the place, Scott. I
have no doubt. And first and foremost, you know, my position is this, is that I will never, ever, ever say that the Bible is an easy read.
Correct.
Number one, it's a collection of a lot of ancient writings. And when we say the word ancient, I really mean ancient. We're talking about ancient cultures, ancient civilizations, people that we don't get.
Yeah.
Customs, you know, history, that is, you know, such a long time ago.
Yeah.
So, that is the setting. And so if that's the setting, it's really hard to like cut through that and see, you know, the beauty that really comes out of it. So I, you know, right off the bat, it's definitely difficult. It's a difficult read. And two, you know, you can't read it like I wish we could read it like a romance because it really is a romance. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, it's not written that way. So, you guys both know that like, and I just, the last episode we recorded, I actually just quoted Matthew from my,
I was about
Matthew
to ask you, I wish I, yeah, in my head, I was like, what version is this?
Yeah. Yeah. I translated Matthew, to like my own translation. Not in, not in the sense like I'll just make it say this, but to try to like put it into like everyday terms. But I really wanted to make it more like a novel read than a historical document read, because it really is a historical document. But it can be read as a novel, as a story, a true story, actually. So, So the problem is that, the translation that we have now is literally just, has been amended for a long time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what translation we've been amending to for over 500 years? Tyler,
I'm trying to go back into my religious studies brain. Oh no, Dead Sea Scrolls, something. I don't know.
Well,
what
the Dead Sea Scrolls helped us like verify that what we were reading was
true. What is like the English translation that we're, so once it was translated,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
From the original language into English, what is that English translation that we're translating from, retranslating from?
I have no idea.
Well, if you'd have kept reading David Team's book,
probably
you would have found out that honestly, William Tyndale, and listen, we bring this guy's name up because
Scott brings this guy's name
up. He's important. He's really important.
To Scott.
No. No. He's important to the whole.
He's important to me too, yeah.
He's important to this whole deal because he was the first dude that translated the Hebrew, well, first of all, the Greek, the original Greek, into a New Testament that people could read. And not only, only, and this is like the 1500s, so the 16th century. So not only did he, you know, put it into English that people could read. First of all, they were not allowed to read an English version. So they had to read the original Latin Vulgate. We'll kind of talk about that a little bit too. But so William Tyndale, he actually like created language. I mean, some of the phrases that he invented like were revolutionary.
Really?
Yes.
Like what?
Prove it to me.
I'm kidding.
I will look it up. But like, for instance, I'm trying to think about what I just read. But yeah, I think like, okay. I will look it up while we're talking.
Like the Bible means basic instructions before leaving Earth. Is that
this says Tyndale framed his question in the mildest language possible. In the body of this prologue, he used Bible phrases such as spirit of meekness, gift of God, walk in darkness. People didn't talk like that.
Okay, cool.
And we use those things.
Yeah.
Salt even of today. The earth. He talk, I just Googled it real quick.
Yeah.
Salt of the earth and eat, drink, and be merry.
Oh.
Yeah.
City on a hill, my brother's keeper.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. He invented like modern English.
Okay.
Atonement, scapegoat, mercy seat.
Ooh. Yes. Yes.
Jehovah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, even people like Shakespeare like stole his language style.
Right.
And because they saw it as brilliant, it's amazing. So he really seriously transformed like not only the Bible, but the English language. So literally, almost every translation, English translation we have of the Bible right now stems off of his.
Tyndale.
Yep. That's why it was so revolutionary. And he created new culture like overnight. Hmm. And with some of these, I mean, which is crazy to think of, like it's in the context of the Bible. People are taking these phrases and using them in everyday life. And they came from the Bible, his Bible translation of the New Testament. So there's both good and bad news here. The good news is William Tyndale transformed English language. He transformed the English translation of the New Testament, and it's revolutionary. The bad news is we're still using it.
Mm.
And culture has changed. It's changed big time. And unfortunately, the Bible translation just has not. So there are a lot of phrases that are continued to be used in our modern English Bible translations that Tyndale created, you know, 5 centuries ago.
Right. Okay, I haven't been listening to Scott because I've been Googling.
All right.
Fisherman?
Yep.
He made that compound word. Castaway, busybody.
Yep. Fisherman atonement. Was not a word?
Nope. Passover wasn't a word?
Nope.
How?
Like all these words.
Interesting.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a G.
At the end of the book, that's what you should have done. Read the intro and then just go to the back of the book.
You should have told me to do that.
The back of the book has a whole
okay.
thing of phrases and words and stuff that he just created. Mm. So good news, bad news, right? He did it, which is awesome. It was revolutionary. It changed how we look at the Bible even today. Problem is, it hasn't continued to like really evolve. Change. And we have Bible scholars who get all geeked up and they still want to use same words and phrases and stuff, which then ends up becoming Christianese.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes, 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 yes.
So and that's why you guys interview your students and say, tell me about your relationship with Jesus. And all they do is spurt out these phrases that were coined 500 years ago.
Yep.
So no wonder we can't read the Bible, because it's, even though it's in quote unquote modern English, it really is not. There's a whole context to the Bible that where if you just said, I want to read Genesis. You can't just read Genesis and get a real good grasp on the entire Bible. Mm-hmm. Obviously not. You can't do that. You can't. There's no way you can do that with any book. Mm-hmm. You can't just go pick up a book and go, let's see. I'm going to read chapter 14, see what that's about. I get, who's this guy? Who's that guy? I don't know what the crap's going on. And then I stop reading it. Or I jump around from here to here to here. The only thing that you can probably do to get a good grasp on a major section like the New Testament would be to read a gospel. That's why I chose Matthew to do first.
Makes sense.
Because I'm like, all I want to do is help retell the story of Jesus in actual modern language, our modern language, because I understand what he was trying to get at. I would change even certain words that had for things or whatever and change them to maybe something which is called a transliteration. It's not a literal translation. Yeah. If he's talking about, you know, sheep, I might have said like cows or something like that. What makes it, who cares? It's basically the same concept. But hey, well, I know what a cow is. We got cow. We pass cows all the time. Some people go in the United States and never even see a sheep.
Correct.
So therefore, you know, I was going to say, I used to say goats. Now that's probably not true because of goat yoga and all that stuff. But, and our friend, I think it's our friend Scott who owned goats and did a goat farm thingy.
Oh my gosh, this Scott! Scott Coggins. That's not a surprise that he did that.
Yeah. Hey Scott, if you're
Scott Coggins,
bring those goats over to my house. You can eat all the grass you want, buddy.
Bring some of those vending machines over too.
Yep.
And stick a couple quarters in, and I get thirsty watching the goats eat. Okay, so let's talk about the Bible. Let's talk about some facts about the Bible, because
can
we can't
I ask
really
a question.
Yeah, go for it.
I don't know where this is going. Is it okay if I derail this a little bit?
If it derails, I may pause it for something else, but
do you think that there was this idea that the concept of the Bible didn't exist until way, way, way later, right? But the idea, like the Old Testament, so what is the whole thing? The Tanakh or
the Torah.
Do you think people thought that would continue to be translated into modern? Do you think it was supposed to be this like ancient text that you kept left it alone and only read kind of like the way that during Tyndale's time, right? It's like you can't read this in English.
Yeah.
It's supposed to stay in this
Latin.
Because it was only for this specific person or people group. Is that
or just like it'll take away from the original meaning.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Right.
I want to say yes and no.
Okay.
Because if we're talking about the Old Testament specifically, we're talking about a certain specific type of people.
Yeah, group, that's what
the
Jews. Yeah.
Right. And so therefore, why would the non-Jews need to know anything about the Torah? Right. They're not a part of it. Right. So no, because we're Jewish and we're always going to speak Hebrew.
Yeah.
So that would be their thought.
No reason to translate it.
But the problem is that, you know, 400 years later after the exile and we see Jesus here. Now we know that most people can't even speak Hebrew anymore, even though they're Jews.
Yeah.
They can't read it. They can't speak it. So what do they end up doing? They end up translating the original Hebrew Torah into the Septuagint. So it's in Greek.
Right.
So a yes and a no. I think that in the Old Testament, they just thought, well, this is our dynasty. Yeah. I mean, we're going to do this forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Have no clue that the kingdom will split in two. Have no clue that they'll be thrown into exile, that the temple will be destroyed. No, never thought that.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, things change and you got to back up and punt every once in a while. So no, that was not taking it way off course. Right. Good question, though.
Great question, Chris.
You're done for the day. You got it. Tyler, you got a ways to go, pal.
I'm sorry, William.
Yeah, you tell that to David Teams.
And Mr. Teams, Professor Teams, I'm sorry.
So you guys have mentioned this before, too, that you feel like some of your students see, and not just some of your students, I mean, a lot of people see the Bible as a to-do list, right? These are all the things that you have to do. Do this, don't do that.
Well, that's a set of rules, that's what being a Christian is.
Right.
That's the whole point.
That's the whole point.
Is knowing what to do and what not to do.
Right. And so I just saw a friend of mine on Facebook post you know me, and I've got these people that share this crap on Facebook that's supposedly theology, and it's like...
What's their name?
I'll just mute it out anyway. So.
I'm kidding.
It's a friend of mine from high school and our youth group.
Okay,
Anyway, so this person posted, you know, the B-I-B-L-E, the acronym, which is basic instructions before leaving Earth.
Yes.
And I think I've told you guys before, like, most people don't really know where that came from. I know exactly where that came
from. Where'd it come
from? It came from a rap group, a Christian rap group. And the guy who started the rap group, his name was Super C, Chris Cooper. And he coined the phrase basic instruction before leaving Earth.
Super C.
Who,
what group?
Huh?
What group?
The group was, SFC, Soldiers for Christ, SFC.
Oh,
and they were a late 80s, early 90s.
Sign me up. Group.
But honestly, they were awesome. They really were very, very, very talented. And he was kind of like a godfather almost of Christian rap. He coined it, and then someone grabbed a hold of it, and you know how we do at Christianity. Yeah. We love to take them and run with it. Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to share that with everybody, even though technically it's not true.
Mm.
So basic instructions before leaving Earth, which is basically an instruction manual, right? Do these things to get to heaven, which is the end goal. That's Western theology for you. So I thought I'd just kind of talk about like some basics. So there's a Latin phrase called tab biblia sacra.
Okay.
It's from... That's where we get the word Bible, right? In the Bible, the word in the Greek is biblos. Biblos is basically just means book. Ta sacra, ta biblia sacra means the sacred collection or the sacred book. And we shorten it in English just to the word Bible. So the reality is that, you know, in Christianity, we always think that there's these Christian words, the Christianese, that we say over and over and over, that Jesus literally was like Moses. He went up onto the mountain and God said, here's some Christian words I'm going to create for you. And this is going to be, and Bible's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's right. That's it. Jesus brought it back down. Guess what, guys? We're going to create something called the Bible. What's the Bible? What is that?
The Holy Bible.
They don't know what the word Bible is. Which is not true, because they absolutely do know what the word Bible means. It's biblos, which means book. We're going to create. It's just very simply a collection. It's a book. It is what it is. It's a collection actually of 66 different writings, or we call those books, like the book of Genesis or the book of Exodus. They're just collections. The Genesis is just a collection of a history. And so there's 66 of those. And there are 39 in the Old Testament or 27 in the New Testament. And also in the New Testament, some of those are letters. Those are mainly the letters that Paul wrote to Christians here and there. Peter wrote some, John wrote whatever.
The epistles.
And so there are over 40 writers of the entire Bible over a 400-year period of time. And the Old Testament was written primarily in Hebrew, and the New Testament was a mixture between Greek and Aramaic because those are languages of the day. Makes sense. So we get this guy named Jerome. You may have heard him referenced to as Saint Jerome. Maybe? No?
Nothing.
Okay. Jerome was a priest.
Sorry, Jerome.
Yeah, he's dead. Don't worry about it. He's not listening to this. Well, he may be in here right now watching over Tyler. I don't know.
Or me specifically. Only if you're
Catholic. Only if you're Catholic. Well, and people do pray to him.
Careful.
So. Be careful there. It's walking a fine line. He was a priest in the late 4th and early 5th century, and he basically translated the Greek and Hebrew scriptures into the common language Latin. This is the Latin Vulgate that we talk about. It was completed in 405 AD, of course. It was recognized then as the official authoritative Bible by the Council of Trent in 1546, and it became the official Bible of the Roman Catholic Church. And also, when we say the word Catholic, it's important to have in your mind the word universal, because then it makes sense, the Roman Universal mm-hmm. Church. So the Catholic isn't a, you know, isn't but a denomination.
Right, but Roman universal doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's a universal church that was established in Rome.
Okay, got it.
And now just it's saying. Universal, and it's in England. And
if it's universal, it's not just Roman, you know?
Huh? Well, it started in Rome, right. And now it's not just in Rome.
Yeah.
It's universal. And here soon, after the Council of Trent's going to decide on this, here soon, right after that, Henry VIII is going to say, you know what, I'm done with Rome. We're going to have universal church here. We'll have the Church of England.
Right.
And we're going to break away from Rome. And matter of fact, the Pope's not going to be the head of anything anymore. The king is. So the king now is mm-hmm. the monarchy is the mm-hmm. head of the church. A lot of people, and you guys correct me if you think this is not right, but I believe that a lot of people see the Bible, you know, of course they probably do, as two different worlds, right? We have the Old Testament and we have the New Testament, and they are completely two different things going on. We got, there are two different ways that God worked. Yeah. He worked one way in the Old Testament, and then he made something new, and he worked mm-hmm, a completely mm-hmm, different way. Mm-hmm. And it's almost, it can be very, very, very closely related to the idea that God is different
yes.
in the Old Testament than what he is in the New Testament.
Yes.
On a matter of fact, in the Old Testament, it kind of looks like a mean God.
Yes.
People are fighting all the time. People are conquering. People are killing. They're mm-hmm. sacrificing. They're doing these weird, crazy, weird, ugh. In the New Testament, oh no, that's Jesus. He's a loving God. He's
chilled out.
He's chilled. He's a man of the people, and he's for everybody.
Yeah.
And you can definitely see that way. The word testament means covenant, and the word covenant means contract or agreement. It's basically God saying, "Here's the deal. I want to make a covenant with you guys. We need to come to an agreement here because I'm trying to reestablish a relationship with you." And so, it's very easy to look at that and say, oh, okay, well, that's the old agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is the new agreement. So the old agreement doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
We're not bound by that old agreement anymore. We're bound by the new agreement. And that's the way it's been set up. And that it's rightfully so. People should probably feel that way. I felt that way for a long time. And then I started, you know, really digging deeper into like the minds of a lot of Bible scholars, especially scholars of the Old Testament, because what they end up doing is they don't call it the old and the new. They call it the first and the second.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have the first mm-hmm. agreement, and then we have the second agreement. Mm-hmm. And okay. what they do is they say, which is a much better way to look at things, they say if you cannot have the second agreement without having first a first agreement.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yes.
And so that helps to bring the whole Bible in as one instead of two separate deals, mm-hmm. two separate people, even though they're separated by 400 years.
Right.
There's a 400-year gap right in there. And things are real different, you know, in Jesus's day than what they were, you know, towards the exile. But being able to see that there's like a two-part in the agreement. Like the agreement actually consists of two parts. There was the first, and now we have the second. And Jesus didn't come to say, as we all kind of know, Jesus, you know, said, I didn't come to abolish the law, mm-hmm. the Torah. Mm-hmm. I actually came to fulfill it. So then it helps you to go, okay, the Old Testament is part one, and the New Testament is part two. And Jesus then is the culmination of this, of this, of this whole story. And the reality, when you see it like that, it's not two separate things. It's not two separate thoughts or two separate worlds. It's actually one. And the reality is that there's one narrative that flows from one section into the second section. So I'm telling you the reality of it, but the other reality is, like, that's really hard to learn.
Okay.
It's not easy. It's becoming easier. Thank goodness to, like, the Bible Project and stuff that. And us, and you know, we're trying to do this as well. And a lot of other people trying to make, trying to help the Bible become way less, you know, obscure for people. To make it more like, hey, this is, because it is a story of people. You know, it's a story of human beings, really. And no matter what, I don't care if 2,000 years transpires between our generation and the next generation, they're still gonna, we're still gonna share very, very similar and pretty much the same, like, cores, right?
Sure.
The greed, you know, lust.
Yeah, just human stuff.
Human stuff. Yeah. Anger, fear, love, hope, all those kinds of things are all shared no matter what. The context can change. The culture can change. The location can drastically change. But ultimately, the human factor is always going to be the same.
Right.
It's always going to be the same. But so it's easy to look at it and see that this was something written for a long time. It is ancient. But that does not mean that the core of it is ancient. And it does not mean that the core of it then is out of touch or irrelevant.
Right.
Matter of fact, it's incredibly relevant because it isn't a story about culture. It is not a story about a specific people. It is a story about humanity and God. And so that's the reality of what it is, but it's also incredibly, it's a task.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It is a task. You can't just watch the movie and go, oh yeah, I got that.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you think of it like that way, like the people are like really into like certain movies or trilogies, like, you know, let's say like Lord of the Rings or something like that. I mean, our family is a big Lord of the Rings fan. We love Lord of the Rings. Carly loves the Hobbit trilogy. We all do. And I don't care how many times I've, and you've probably felt this way too. If you're into something like that and you watch it over and over, you're going, people are going, you watch that multiple times? Why? And it's like, I learn something new every time I read it or watch it. And so, you know, even on that kind of level, even if the Bible was a movie, you probably still wouldn't be able to like get it the first time. You'd have to watch it again and again and again, even though you may like going, I really like this.
Yeah.
I really like what this is about. And you can get it. You can get what it's about. But every time you watch it again, you get another piece of the puzzle.
I got this from the Bible Project, because they said it's also like, when you said, right, it's one continuous story from part one to part two.
Yep.
So then, but then that's still not that easy, because they describe the Bible as a library instead of just like a book, because there's just so many genres within that. There's just sections of the library. There's sections of the Bible that are different. So it's like instead of like Lord of the Rings, it's like Avengers or the Marvel universe is like what, like 20 movies. It's like watching like three, and then all of a sudden one is a horror, one's black and white, one is just like an artsy one to get through, one's like a biography all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And so it's not just like the same thing. You have to be, because they also describe it as being good tourist. You can't just bring all your culture and beliefs of what this should be into the original context.
Yeah.
So it is still a task.
It is.
Which I think people, I think it's harder for people to like, just let me just read it.
Right.
If you see it as a checklist,
yeah,
let me just read it. And then I'll take away everything that God needs to like, to give me, right?
Let's use Tyler as an example here. Okay.
You're pointing at me.
Let's use Tyler. Pointing both fingers at Tyler now. Let's use Tyler as an example. Tyler started to read David. He started to read David Teem's book on his biography of William Tyndale. And you told me that it started getting a little too academic and too thick and historical and stuff like that, right?
Correct.
You are saying what I would guess is the default feeling for most people. And we're talking about, again, an ancient document. And so I think right off the bat, most people go, I don't want to do that. If it's not like modern history, that involves like, okay, as far back as I really, really want to go is like the Wild West, you know, or the Civil War.
Interesting.
Before that, the whole Revolutionary War and all that. I mean, okay, I get it, and England and stuff, but it, you know, it's like as far as like typically default, as far as history goes, we don't really want to go back too far, unless you're a historical guy, and I kind of am. I want to go and learn world history. Not just American Charlotte history, or North Carolina history, or United States history, or whatever. Like, do you care what happens in Canada?
Not in particular.
Not really.
Sorry.
Not really. Sorry, Canadians. Yeah. We love your bacon, but I mean, other than that, you know,
it's my general view of Canada.
That's fine.
Yeah. Right. I mean, so like, I think that is the default thoughts. Of the Bible, because it is what it is. It's not, another thing too, Chris, what you said made me think of this. Like what I just said, it's over 40 authors. It's not one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's different perspectives. Mm-hmm. I mean, like for instance, like the books of First and Second Samuel and First and Second Kings, and Chronicles. Those there's six books there. Okay, those six books like retell the same stories from different point of views. Mm-hmm. So like so there are different people writing these things.
Yeah.
There are different takes on it. Most people in our Western culture, just for example here, is that we typically think that Genesis is a history book.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because it's got history. It tells the history of creation. The reality is like Genesis is not a history book. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's literature.
Mm-hmm.
It's more poetic than it is anything. It happens to tell the story in a poetic form. And so there's a lot to it, man. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like it's not. It is. There's a lot to it.
Yep.
And but I will say, like, as you said, thank goodness for like the Bible Project and other people who are really trying to like not dumb it down, but to bring an ancient culture alive into a modern culture. Mm-hmm. I do love the idea of being tourists through it, because I think we can really respect it and also get it too without dismissing it as like ancient history.
Right.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with me here today, but the reality is it absolutely does.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely does. And this is, let me get your guys' thoughts on this. My friend Jason and I, Jason is listening. What's up, dude? He does listen. We've talked about this before because we've grown into this amazing, great appreciation for the Old Testament, AKA the First Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are able to see the narrative and go, oh my, wow.
Yes.
This actually lines up with Jesus. The story is the same throughout the whole thing. It's amazing. Can you actually be a Christian without ever reading the Old Testament?
I mean, okay. I don't know if this is like a trick question. Because the answer is obviously you can, but it's the idea that if you don't have access to it, that's one thing. But if you have access to it, and if you're actually a Christian, you will end up reading it, right? I don't, right? But like, you won't. So I in the a book, who's the guy, the Bema podcast guy,
Marty Solomon.
He wrote a book on that, and he I'm looking at Tyler in the piano. Yes. Your left hand plays what? It's one is the
rhythm.
What's the other one?
They
play two different.
Yeah,
like, melody
one
and rhythm.
Melody. Yeah, melody.
Right. He
melody,
said like they're like the there's this the idea of. No, that's not right.
Oh man.
Well, I think it was that like
Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or something.
Yeah,
he talks about one of those songs.
Oh yeah, is, you know what I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because he said like, but that's how you approach it, not the old.
He's
old
like, Testament, if you would have heard Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, yeah, with just the rhythm,
yeah,
you would never know what it is.
Yes.
But if you played the right, right hand, okay, alone, yes, okay, you do, because so whatever we said.
The First Testament, like, mm-hmm, part one, really, mm-hmm, sets up the big, like, it gives more volume,
right,
more depth to everything you're hearing.
Right.
So can you, in my opinion, can you be a Christian and never read the Old Testament? Yes, but you're probably missing out so much.
Yeah.
Right, of like, I don't know. There's just so much. Because you, mm-hmm, unless the whole thing is one. Mm-hmm. If you don't take it as one thing,
right,
you're doing yourself a disservice.
Right.
Yeah. Because
I guess the question we might be better asked, like, how deep in the relationship? Yeah. Because really, as we've said before, being a Christian doesn't mean you just take a title and you go, well, I'm a juror now. Yeah. Cool. No, it's a lifestyle. And more than anything, it is a relationship. It's an ongoing relationship. And so it would be the same thing of like saying, how far, Tyler, can your relationship with your wife go if you don't know anything about her past?
Right.
Not that far.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because typically the past makes who the person is in the present.
Correct.
Right. And so, and if you didn't really care to know, she would be like, I'm trying to tell you, like, right, how I was raised, yeah, in my family. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I don't really don't
care. If I wasn't interested in her past, then am I really interested in her?
Exactly. Exactly. And I, to me, that's the same correlation with Jesus.
Sure.
Because, yes, Jesus is referencing,
yeah,
God and the whole pre-story leading up to the New Testament. He is. And so how far can you really get if you don't? That being said, it's definitely not easy, and we're not going to sit here and tell everybody, hey, you know, you need to go read the Old Testament. Even though you do. I would definitely take some guidance along and help you navigate, because it's a big deal.
And I don't think it's like this thing to achieve understanding of who God is. Like, it's not this task that has to be, mm-hmm, fulfilled and then I'll know my relationship, yeah, with God, mm-hmm, in this, yeah, way. No, I mean, it'll take, I don't know, your entire life.
Yes. That's
part of the journey is,
it is
the unfolding of this massive story that,
right,
God chose us to be a part of.
Right.
Right. And that's part of just being alive.
Yeah. And there is no finish line of knowing God.
Right.
Because then he's not really God. If he can,
sure,
if I can take 30 years, 70 years, 80 years of my life, yeah, and figure him out.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's worth figuring out at that point.
Correct.
But yes, you want your marriage to be rich.
Yes.
Yeah, and
yeah,
deep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And to be able to, like, you know, get through all of the hard things together, so, right, that on the end, so that when you go through those hard things, you become even deeper and richer. And, yeah, then you go through more hard things, mm-hmm, and become even,
yeah, building trust.
Yeah. Yeah. So the question is then, is it relevant? Is it out of touch? And I know that seemingly you could easily look at it and go, this is an ancient writing. Of course it is, because we're living in 21st century America.
Right.
We don't live in the Middle East. And matter of fact, look at the Middle East right now. Hmm. I don't think I want.
Sure.
I'm good. I don't, yeah, want to know, yeah, the history of all that mess. Yeah. But the reality is like, and we're going to get into this in the next couple of episodes, but it is incredibly relevant. It is it really is a love story. It is a romance. And it is about the finding true identity as human beings when encountering a God.
From the whole Rheology team, we hope these podcasts are encouraging and educational. Rheology exists for three main reasons: to reach, train, and equip those who want to go deeper with God in this partnership called Ecclesia. If God has been stirring in your heart, where you are wondering if there's more than what you've been experiencing in today's 21st century Christianity, we'd love to connect with you, to hear your story and help you know that you are not alone. You can simply contact us via the website, rheologylife.com, or reach out via Instagram at rheology_life. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.